Blog Talk Radio.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest spring, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the His face, I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast today. I trust everyone had a fantastic Easter celebration yesterday. I know at church was blessed by the selection of songs celebrating the victory of Christ over death, hell, and the devil. Was a wonderful time, a wonderful celebration, and I'm thinking of the freedom we have to worship. And I had the opportunity yesterday to, on my cell phone, video a couple of really powerful worship songs for my Iranian friend Fatima. She is featured in our book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran, and she's a fearless warrior for Christ in Iran. She's been put in prison for 6 months because she converted from Islam to Christianity, and she has a site on her Instagram page. It's a campaign for having a church in Iran where all Iranian Christians can go to without fear of imprisonment. It's her dream. Right now, it's an impossible task. But God is the God of the impossible. And she asked me and many others to send their videos to her so she could put up on her Instagram site the Easter celebration in churches of Christians all around the world. And I sent her two videos. How wonderful that is for her to post these videos when she herself has no freedom, but she wants to say, look, this is what a celebration looks like in Christian churches all over the world, and this is my dream to have that same reality one day in Iran. So up on her site, her campaign site, is the videos from our Easter celebration. There is some good news coming out of Iran I want to talk to you briefly about. It's about Golruk Iri. She was released from prison on April 8th, just a couple of weeks ago, after posting bail. It was set at 60 million tomans, which in U.S. money is $14,242. That's a big chunk of money. Now, according to Article 134 of Iran's Islamic Penal Code, Golrokh was supposed to serve at least 5 years of her prison sentence. It's really not clear why she was released. Now, here's the bad news. She could be incarcerated again if found guilty in a case brought against her and her best friend, which is political prisoner Atna Daemi. They could send her back to prison. The other case is basically a complaint against both of them filed by a Mr. Chowramali, accusing them of a lot of things like insulting the supreme leader, disturbing public opinion, and propaganda against the state. So they could incarcerate her again. Atna and Golrokh have both presented their defense, and some of the charges against them have been dropped. They still have to present yet their final defense, and it's not clear what the remaining charge in the case is really all about. Now, Atna Daemi, which is her former cellmate, she's been in prison since November 2016. Atna is serving a 7-year prison sentence for meeting the families of political prisoners, criticizing the Islamic Republic of Iran on Facebook, and condemning Iran's 1988 mass execution of some 30,000 political prisoners. Now, Golrokh Iri's husband, who is civil rights activist Arash Sadasi, he is in prison yet, serving a 15-year sentence just for simple, peaceful political activities. Now, if you know anything about Arash, and you've been following my radio broadcast, he is in very serious health condition. Since June of last year, he was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer that causes bone tumors. So what I'm asking for you, my listener, to do is just continue to keep Arash in your prayers, Golrokh in your prayers. Please continue to be their voice, to speak out, and to pray for these wonderful, committed human rights activists in Iran who are fighting for their freedom. But there is some good news. Golrokh is released on bail, but still has to present her defense against these charges with her best friend, Atna Daemi. Now, in the last several days, as I've surveyed the internet, I came across another story of two Saudi sisters who have fled the Palace of Terror, I call it, in Saudi Arabia because of the male guardianship law, because of the abuse of men against them and family members against them. Two more Saudi sisters have fled. They left Saudi Arabia. They have been planning this for about 5 years, and they are amazing young ladies. These girls, here's how they escaped. They stole their father's cell phone, and they signed into the Saudi government-backed woman tracking application known as Absher. Yeah, they have a woman tracking application in Saudi Arabia. From there, they reset the password and then granted themselves permission to leave the country. Now, they got passports. They're not saying how they got them. The controversial app is provided by both Google and Apple. Shame on them. Absher allows a Saudi man to do things like order passports or government documents online. The app will also send male users SMS alerts when their female presents a passport at any border in case the female tries to flee without permission. Basically, this app allows a man to track his women's movements. Well, this is how they stop them, is with this app. But these two girls are smart, and they found a way around that app. I'm sure they're probably going to find a way to redesign it now. Their names are Wafa Zayed Al-Sabawi, 25, and her 28-year-old sister, Maha. We're going to hear right now a special report about these two Saudi sisters and also about activist Lou Jane Al-Haflu, who is in prison being tortured in Saudi Arabia. I'm going to come back to you in about 7 minutes, and we'll talk more about this case.
If you thought that last June's announcement that Saudi women could finally drive was a first step to freedom, think again.
We are Saudi sisters. My name is Mahan and my sister Lofa. We are in danger. We need your support.
Two Saudi sisters have now taken to Twitter to say they've fled to Georgia. They want to claim asylum, fearing they'll be killed if sent back to their family in Saudi Arabia. Fleeing itself is a crime, because in Saudi, women can't travel without the permission of a male guardian.
My father and brothers are in Georgia and they are looking for us. We fled the Russian from our family because the laws in Saudi Arabia is too weak to protect us.
In January, Rahaf Mohammed Al-Qunun made a similar Twitter plea from Bangkok Airport.
I want asylum.
She was eventually welcomed to Canada by the foreign minister. Other Saudi women have managed to get to Europe or the US after escaping abusive families or the danger of imprisonment for activism. Lujain Al-Haslul defied the previous ban on driving and campaigned for women's rights. Last May, she was kidnapped in Dubai and dragged to a Saudi prison. She and other activists were scheduled to appear in court this morning, but the judge postponed the hearing without giving a reason. Today, Time magazine nominated Al-Haslul as one of the 100 most influential people in the world. Her sister Lena addressed a conference of women in New York last week.
What are the crimes my sister has allegedly committed? Activism against Saudi Arabia's male guardianship laws. Contact with foreign journalists. Applying for a job at the United Nations.
The Saudis have nominated a woman, Rima bin Sultan, as ambassador to the US. But such tokenism does nothing for campaigners for women's rights imprisoned on spurious charges. In the reign of King Salman and Crown Prince Mohammed, scores of human rights activists have been arrested and allegedly tortured, not to mention the murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Yet Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was welcomed to London last year and has received no criticism from President Trump. So who will listen to the cries of two frightened young Saudi women in Georgia?
Well, now, earlier I spoke to Lena Al-Haslul, who you saw there in Lindsay's report, talking about her sister Lujain. I began by asking Lena to explain the charges against that her sister is now facing.
So they're about being in contact with foreign journalists. The fact that she's also in contact with Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. The fact that she has been fighting the male guardianship system in Saudi Arabia. And so it's basically the fact that she has been active in the human rights activities and defending them.
Can she get a fair trial?
Well, we hope so. But the thing is that it hasn't been so transparent till now. So the day that they announced that there's going to be a trial, they said it's going to be in the terrorism court. And just the day before the trial, they said, oh, no, finally, it's not going to be in the terrorism court. It's going to be in the normal criminal court in Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, and for example, also today, there was supposed to be a session, and they just tell us the same day that it's going to be postponed. So it's a bit difficult to understand how things are going when it's not so transparent. But we really, really hope that it's going to be a fair trial.
You have said that she has been tortured.
Yes, she has.
There have been reports that Saud al-Qahtani, who is an advisor to the Crown Prince and was implicated in the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, that he was present during the torture of your sister. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, he was present at least in one of the sessions of torture. That's what Lujain, my sister, has said to my parents. And she recognized him and she told my parents that it was him. And he was actually the one giving all the orders for the torture. And he was the one with all the ideas of the torture.
What diplomatic support are you getting from anybody in this case? Who is helping you?
We thought that silence would help her, so we stayed silent, and we haven't asked for any help for the first 10 months. And then when we found out about torture, we said, yeah, we really have to do something about it. So what we do is that we speak out, and then whoever is convinced and really is touched by the story, they do some things. But I don't want to get really political. I just want to save my sister and not make things too political, because it's not my domain.
As we speak, what do your parents say about how she is?
She is, health-wise, she's a bit better. Her body is a bit, is healing more and more. But the thing is that she's very disappointed, because they have promised that she could have a temporary release, and she hasn't. And they promised also that there was going to be not a fair trial, but at least that it was going to be well organized, and it hasn't been so. So she's very disappointed of what's happening now, but she's still staying very strong, and health-wise, she's a bit better.
And when you talk about the mistreatment of her in prison and the torture,
yes.
What sort of thing has she been subjected to?
So she has been electrocuted. She has been sexually harassed. She has been whipped.
If by chance you could give your sister a message, what would you say now?
That I'm very, very proud of her, that I love her, and that I will not stop talking, and I will do my best to save her.
Lina Al-Haplul, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is Lina Al-Haplul, the sister of Lujan Al-Haplul, a prominent woman, Saudi Arabian activist woman, that has been in prison right around the time that the driving ban was lifted back in June of 2018. She is a prominent woman activist, and she's also been waterboarded, besides whipped, electrocuted. All these things are happening, and it's absolutely unacceptable what is going on with these women in Saudi Arabia. Now, I want to go back to these two Saudi sisters in Georgia, and I just want to mention that last October of last year, there were two young Saudi sisters found dead in the Hudson River. They were floating. They were found duct taped together, and at first it was speculated that they might have been murdered, but it was later, after much investigation, it was determined that these two Saudi sisters, who had applied for asylum here in the United States, who had escaped a detention center that their parents had put them in here in the United States, had been on the run doing their best to get help for their situation, and knowing that no one was going to help them, they lost all hope and were very despaired, and decided that if they cannot have freedom, that they would just take their lives and end it all. And it's such a tragedy, such a tragedy. I do not want to see the same thing happen to these two Saudi sisters in Georgia. They are in Tbilisi, Georgia, in the Soviet Union. And after 2 weeks of trying and failing to get asylum in any other country, they finally have gone public with their case. On this past Wednesday, the pair launched a Twitter account appealing to human rights groups in countries where they might be able to seek asylum. They're doing what Rahaf did back in January, who finally was granted asylum in Canada. They said, "We are in danger. We need your support to deliver our voice." This is what Maha said in a video post. "We want protection. We want a country to welcome us and protect our lives. Please help us." The pair also posted photographs of their Saudi passports to prove their identity in hopes that that would bolster their case. The sisters believe that their passports had been, quote, suspended when they attempted to apply for a visa to travel to Australia, and they received an error message. Now, this is a very serious situation. The reason they're there in Georgia is they fled because of abuse and fearing for their lives if their family members found them or were able to forcibly deport them. Now, Georgia's Internal Affairs Ministry released a statement saying that the purpose of their visit was to offer assistance and security guarantees, acknowledging the sisters' fears and clarified that no other members of their family are in Georgia. Now, by traveling independently in a bid for more rights and to escape abusive conditions, however, the sisters may have committed a crime under Saudi's strict guardianship case. I chose fully willing and capable to leave Saudi Arabia. I've committed no crime. What is my crime? That Wafa said. In Saudi Arabia, as you well know, a male relative controls a woman's life from birth to death, effectively treating all women as permanent legal minors. The sisters blame the kingdom's guardianship laws for enshrining their abuse and protecting their abusers and say local authorities were unable or unwilling to help. My father would hit me in front of my child, Maha claimed in tears over her nine-year-old son, who she says she was forced to leave behind. This was my biggest motivation for leaving. I live under the mercy of my male relatives. I prefer death to this life. Now, they have no other options. And just like the two Saudi sisters that were here in the United States that actually escaped a detention center, came to the point where they preferred death to life when no one would help them. Now, these women's plight comes amid an increase in runaways from Saudi Arabia using social media to appeal for help as they leave their life of oppression. According to the UNHCR's latest public records, Saudi refugees and asylum seekers totaled 2,392 back in 2017. Five countries hosted the majority of these Saudis: 1,143 here in the United States, 453 in Canada, 191 in Australia, and 184 in the UK, and 147 in Germany. But the sharpest increase, this is very important, the sharpest increase in Saudi refugees and asylum seekers occurred after 2015, the year Prince Mohammed bin Salman, then 29, emerged in the kingdom's political scene. We constantly hear that Prince Mohammed bin Salman is this great reformist. And I have to say to you, based on the information I have from World Citizens for Saudi Women, it's a great website, that is not the case. Behind the scenes, he is an atrocious human being. And all of this image building is just for public and domestic support. But behind the scenes, he is promoting more torture and imprisonment of activities. The amount of women seeking asylum has been compounded by his campaign to stamp out dissent in the kingdom. You don't dare disagree. Now, the guardianship system makes fleeing the kingdom a difficult task for women who often have to steal their own passports away from their male relatives and even change travel permissions on a guardian cell phone, as I mentioned. And it's because they can find a way to get around the women's app called Absher. It is horrible for these women. You only live once, and this is not a life, Wafa told CNN News. I must ask permission for anything, to get a job, move to a new place, get married. These choices are our most basic rights, and we don't have them. If we ever go back to Saudi Arabia, we will be killed or taken to a women's prison. There are no other options. This is the life for Saudi women. In one of my recent books that Manoush Bakhtiari co-wrote with me, it's called Broken Yet Beautiful, I wrote about the plight of Saudi women in my book. And just to give you an idea of the restrictions placed against them, what they cannot do, Saudi women cannot divorce, travel, get a job, or have surgery first without permission from their male guardians. Now, in 2013, authorities ordered shops that employ both men and women to build separation walls to prevent the sexes from commingling, so Saudi women cannot mix freely with members of the opposite sex. This is somewhat similar to what goes on in Iran. Saudi women cannot appear in public without wearing a full-length black abaya, which is supposed to protect a woman's modesty in public. Saudi women cannot conduct certain businesses without a male sponsor. If a woman wants to own her own business, guess what? She has to call at least two men who can testify of her character in order to have a loan approval or a license. Saudi women cannot apply for a national identification card or passport. Saudi women cannot eat at restaurants that don't have a separated designated family section. Women are also required to use a separate entrance from men. Saudi women cannot retain custody of their children in a divorce. Saudi women cannot get a fair hearing in court. The Quran teaches that their testimony is worth only half that of a man's. And Saudi women cannot receive an equal inheritance. And lo and behold, in April of 2017, the United Nations elected officials from Saudi Arabia to sit on a commission for women's rights. You know, electing Saudi Arabia to protect women's rights in the United Nations is like electing an arsonist to become the town fire chief. It is sad. Please remember these two precious Saudi sisters in your prayers. They need a country that will grant them full asylum, just like Rahaf was given back in January. They need to be able to go to a country where they're free to make their own choices, where they're free from the abuse of their families. They need freedom. So please keep these precious sisters in your prayers. The one thing I don't want to find out is 2 months from now that these two sisters, and because of despair and hopelessness, have taken their lives. This is what happened to two other Saudi sisters back in October of last year. They need hope. They need our voices. They need our support, and they need our prayers. I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning on the Cross in the Desert, and I will join you again next Monday as we talk about the issues facing Iranian people. God bless you, and have a great week.
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest spring, but wholly trust in Jesus' name. Christ the Lord, cornerstone, weak made strong in the Savior's love. Through the storm, He is Lord, Lord. Darkness seems to hide its face. I rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale,